From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. President Obama's State of the Union speech is tonight, and the White House is starting to release snippets of information about it, including a minimum wage of $10.10 for folks working on new federal contracts. Our Washington correspondent, David Gura, joins me live now. Hey, David.
Hey, Lizzie.
So explain this minimum wage boost.
Well, income inequality is something the president has said he wants to tackle in his second term. It's actually an issue that politicians on both sides of the aisle are talking about. The president has been clear that he wants to raise the minimum wage for everybody, for every job, but that is something that he can't do without help from Congress. So this is kind of a workaround, and Heather McGee explains why. She's with the think tank Demos.
He is right now, as the chief executive, the biggest boss of low-wage workers in the country.
There are a lot of federal contractors, Lizzie, $500 billion worth of them. And the White House has said changing their minimum wage would make a difference. More importantly, perhaps it's something the president can do. And the White House is very quick to add this would only affect new contracts.
Got it. So this is part of his sort of go-it-alone strategy, things he can do without Congress.
That's exactly right. I mean, the president is clearly frustrated with Congress, so he and his aides have been talking about and relying more on what they call the phone and the pen to get things done. So the pen here is a clear reference to executive actions like raising the minimum wage for contract workers. Now, Republicans aren't thrilled with this, Lizzie, as you might expect, but I think they know there's a limit to what the president can do. Obviously, he could do more with their help, and you can just look back at the debate over gun control, for instance. The president pushed through, I think, 25 executive orders. Did they make a difference? I think he and his supporters would say yes, but I think it's fair to say they could have accomplished they accomplished much less than they set out to do initially.
David Gura, I know you're going to be reporting much more about
yes.
this for the rest of the day, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, next time you take out your smartphone for a game of Angry Birds or to check Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever, there's a chance you're not the only one who's watching. Documents leaked by Edward Snowden and published in part by The New York Times, The Guardian, and ProPublica show that the British and American governments could be tracking data from some mobile apps. To talk about it, we're joined by the BBC's security correspondent, Gordon Carrera. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why would the government, yours or mine, care if I'm playing, say, Angry Birds?
Well, I guess the question is, who do they care about? People, when they play games or when they use mapping applications, put in personal information. These applications suck out personal details about where you might be, and that's useful to intelligence agencies. They will say they use this against legitimate targets who might be using applications on their phone and who they might want to track or get information about.
You've got a real conflict here between part of the business model of these applications where they'd like to know where you are so they can sell you mobile ads, and the government's purpose. They want to know where you are for different reasons. Do we have a sense of how consumers might react to this yet?
Well, I think that's what's really interesting about this is that it raises many questions for the software companies that develop these apps as for the intelligence agencies, because, of course, people may not realize when they sign up for these apps, when they sign on those terms and conditions, which people often don't read, they often are giving away their data. That's what the spy agencies are intercepting. But, of course, it's information that the companies are collecting and often monetizing. And so this may highlight to people just how much data they are leaking, personal information they are leaking, and may make them more cautious about that because they don't want the spy agencies, but also because they don't want the tech firms to be using it. And I think that's just one of the ways in which all these revelations are causing problems for the technology industry.
Gordon Carrera, the BBC security correspondent, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Silicon Valley's been in the news this week for talking about money. But this story is about clothes, dressing down, T-shirts, jeans, sneakers. It's hardly a fashion statement. Or is it? Marketplace's Queen of Kim says there's a whole secret code behind it.
When you talk about fashion and Silicon Valley, the first thing that comes to mind is Mark Zuckerberg and his signature hoodie. When Facebook was going public, he got nailed for wearing one while courting investors. But Dan Woods, a techie I met in downtown Palo Alto, says the hoodie wasn't sending a message to Wall Street, but to Silicon Valley.
Hoodie signals young talent. That's what you're trying to show.
In Silicon Valley, the hoodie is also the badge of the engineer. Wood says in this tech boom, the engineers are king. And to attract talent, CEOs need to show that success hasn't made them soft.
You want to signal that you can code, that you're a hacker, because you want to show that you still have the skills, you're still in the game. And if you start to change the uniform, it looks like you're not in the game anymore.
Alexei Komsarek is an engineer, and he says there's a lot of code in the Silicon Valley dress code. In fact, he can guess who's in tech and what they do by just looking at them. He tried out his superpowers on Dan Woods.
What's this thing called? It's like a sweater.
Komsarek is pointing to Woods' zippered V-neck.
That's like classic VC. And then you've got the button-down shirt underneath it. That's like the uniform.
He was right. Woods did work in venture capital, and around that time, he bought the sweater. Eric Schockenberg is the co-founder of Buck Mason, a startup that sells men's clothing, mostly to men in tech, which means lots of T-shirts, jeans, and button-downs. He says the uniform is a longtime tradition in Silicon Valley.
I wear a pair of jeans and a black T-shirt almost every day. It's one less thing you have to think about.
In the fast-moving world of tech, the idea is to show that you're not wasting precious time on something as vain as fashion. In San Francisco, I'm Queen Akim for Marketplace.
If you want to make $3,000, let me sneeze on you. All right. Scientists at the NIH are squirting the flu straight up volunteers' noses. It's to help them design a better flu vaccine. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.